Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers, our 158th episode of speaking to digital transformation leaders around leadership, technology, AI, practices, mindset, everything that goes into how we evolve our organizations. And today's special topic, I've wanted to cover this for quite some time. We're going to be talking about AI first user experiences, planning for the evolution of Gen AI enabled customer journeys. And we've tried to cover this a little bit in different areas and different topics at the coffee hour. This one is very specific to this question mark of, are we ever going to get to the point where we can talk about, oh boy, we can talk about AI above and beyond our above and beyond our hold on a second. What did I do here? Let's see. No, it's gone. Above and beyond our ability to do above and beyond be ability to do workshops, I'm sorry, to do efficiencies and to be able to run our enterprise and everything that's behind the paywall and start getting to areas where we have experiences that are customer facing, that we're impacting our journey maps, that we're really going out into areas like retail, areas like healthcare areas, in insurance, places where we can actually impact how our customers are using our tools and using our capabilities in revolutionary ways. I had a slide here. I'm going to try to bring it up right now with some details. I thought it was going to show up in the whiteboard, and I've gotten into a little bit of a technical issue. So I'm going to try to do this right now in real time so that we can have a real conversation around this. Give me one second, folks. Roman, why don't you introduce yourself, and I will get the slide up in the meantime.
Sure. My name is Roman Dumiak, and I am adjunct faculty at DePaul University in their School of Computing. I'm also a what's called an executive in residence for their innovation development lab at DePaul.
Thank you. Okay, here we go. Can you see this, Roman?
Barely.
Barely.
Okay, much better now.
Much
Much better.
better. Okay. I spent a big chunk of my time yesterday looking for examples of AI in real customer experiences. And sadly enough, I didn't really find that many of them. One really good example I found is some work done by Publicis Sapient. They did some work with Marriott Homes and Villas. This is your ability to go to Marriott's website and rent a home or a villa somewhere. And they were trying to solve the problem of, how do I find somewhere to go when I don't know where I want to go or I don't know when I want to go? I know the type of experience I'm looking for. I know maybe a little bit of who I'm trying to travel with. I know some of my constraints. And so they built a large language model to be able to do that kind of search. You know, I'm looking for a beach vacation, somewhere quiet. I want a place that's less than a mile off the beach. I want good food and all kinds of like criteria like that about the experience. And it comes back with a whole bunch of suggested places that you can go rent. I've left you here a link that you can go see this in. In the State of Consumer AI 2025, this has come from Andreessen and Horowitz. There's a lot of good content in there. But they talked about two places where you're starting to see AI creep into retail. Perplexity has Shop Like a Pro, which I tried to use. I would say I would give it a C in terms of its capability. It really wasn't doing very much. And I tried Amazon Rufus a few times, and I'd actually give it a D. It just did not warrant the kind of response that I would probably use it as a first replacement for their browsing and search capabilities. And so I think we still have a lot of work to do in terms of making our AIs ready for the B2C experience. There's certainly plenty of examples of happening of AI happening inside enterprise software. I did a blog post around 50 different AI agents that you can get on platforms like Salesforce, Workday, SAP, Appian, lots of different places where you can use agents to improve workflow. And so I have a hypothesis that I'm going to be running by my group today that with every major disruptive technology that's come out with over the last 2 decades, in order for it to scale for organizations to build capabilities with, we had to really rethink our operating model to be able to do this. You're seeing that on the Web 1 on the right-hand side, what triggered transformation. And Web 1.0, this is going back to the late 90s. We were still doing client-server software development. We were still doing waterfall project management. We had to bring agile and web development into our organizations. When cloud computing came out, we could order infrastructure, but we really didn't get the value from the cloud until we invented DevOps. We started putting automation in place like pipelines and infrastructure as code. We challenged our assumptions around the IT's culture around development and operations. We brought those worlds together. Even when mobile came out, our first mobile experiences basically took our web ones, ported them onto mobile screens, and it took a lot of effort around design thinking and the introduction of app exchanges before we started really seeing triggered transformations impacting customer experiences. I have some hypothesis what this is going to look like for generative AI agents and agentic AI around what we need for the customer experiences to really start becoming part of our capabilities. And that's our discussion today. I want to hear from our experts. We're going to start with Roman, our special guest today. We'll go around the horn to all of our normal speakers. I've got Derek, Joanne, John, Joe, and Liz here today. And we're going to start with, this notion, we have Web 1.0. It required teams to think about web development and agile. We had to bring DevOps to make cloud experiences work. We had to bring design thinking to make mobile-first experiences. Roman, what are some of the new disciplines or mindset shifts that digital marketing and IT leaders must adopt for really AI to take a foothold in the customer experience and the customer journeys? Welcome, Roman.
Oh, thanks for having me. What I wanted to do first, though, was maybe piggyback on your comment. I think getting to an AI-first user experience is really going to require people who understand how to do that. It happens to be that, colleges survey their recent graduates, and from a career standpoint, we know that people in technical fields have really been feeling it for the last year plus. But interestingly, people who are involved in human computer interaction or UX UI design seem to be doing okay. Now, we don't necessarily from those surveys know exactly why that is, but the hypothesis is they're doing well because in their career path, they need both soft skills and critical thinking skills all the way from low-level visual front-end design into more advanced things like content specialist or UX architect who's building a front-end framework or even UX research. And then the second thing is that the need for designers as product-based companies start to implement AI in their tools is growing. So we all know pretty much every software tool now says AI first or AI embedded or something like that. But interestingly, robotics is now getting away from, or not away from, but enhancing beyond just automation and replacing tasks to having humans and robots working together. And that requires some, expertise in how you're going to make that happen. And then last, thirdly, we think that the skills that design people have are transferable to other roles, particularly in areas like product management, and you mentioned marketing, for example. So, currently the modality is really kind of text-based chat, but people want to use other modalities, voice and gesture recognition and things like that. And there's also a push to replace a lot of manual input and integration between systems with Gen AI tools. So that's kind of what we see from our recent graduates, I guess, is this whole field of human-computer interaction seems to be fairly stable. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying, those are the people that seem to be doing well in this economy.
Thank you for that perspective, Roman. I want to say hello to a bunch of people who have said where they're from on the Commons train. Hello from to London, New York City, Maryland, Boston. What else we got here? Manchester, United Kingdom, New York, New Jersey, Pune. Awesome. We've got a real world crowd here, Joanne. And Roman is talking about skill change, human computer interaction as a skill set. Maybe we need voice as a modality before we can bring it to customer experience. What do you think the gap is? Why haven't we seen enough AI first user experiences just yet?
Well, I think there's two things. One is that, in the past, we were limited by form factor, right? Think about the fact that we went from PCs to laptops, from laptops to smartphones and others. And so a lot of the UX and UI were designed for the form factor. Now we have a human machine interface called AI that has various forms. One part of that is the generative AI, type in your prompt or speak to it, use text to speech or speech to text, and you can kind of start from there. But in actuality, when you think about it, a user experience has to be tailored to the persona, the role of the human being, there's sentiment, there's context, there's perspective. There's security in terms of their role and what they should be allowed and should not be allowed to see. And all of that leads you down a path. Agentic AI is very well suited for this. And I can tell you firsthand because ours is autonomously generated. It's based on the factors that we put in to training the models to allow the user experience to be designed for that user's role and in the context that's most relevant to them, whether that's also in a modality of speech to text or text to speech, in whatever language they want, etc. All of those things have to be qu kind of built into systems. So what we're seeing from the agentic side, excuse me, is that a lot of these are headless systems. And allow you to begin to design the UX to suit the user, not a one size fits all that we've lived with for, the last 80 years. We don't have to do that anymore. We can customize, we can micro personalize. There's a lot of different factors that come in, but really it's about governance and it's about building trust. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that kind of come to light over the next year. For a B2C environment, it's not that much more difficult than within the constraints of a single organization. It's knowing what your user really wants by deterministic variable. And I
Interesting.
know it sounds convoluted, but it actually is the fact.
Well, here's what I'm translating this to, Joanne, is that, we've just upped the skill level of different areas and the collaboration of different areas that are needed to make human machine interfaces work. And we're just not there yet. Maybe in software companies, robotics and integrating robotics with AI, that's coming. But in terms of B2C, we're not the companies that need to do this just don't have the skill sets yet and the collaboration to make that happen. Is that a fair way of interpreting it?
Yes, but also I think that their focus has been on Gen AI and not other forms of AI. There are real differences, and this is kind of where the rubber hits the road between agentic AI and generative AI, because one is, an ocean and the other is a bucket. So if we start looking at how you really define the customer journey and the process that you go through, mirroring that into agentics is relatively, I don't want to say simple, but it's not about their skill set. It's about their approach and the mindset.
So basically, the technology is changing really fast, and our companies are stuck in the mud is what I'm
Yeah.
translating that to. And
Work, yes.
understandably, I mean, these are big
Yeah.
investments. When you talk about user experience, product, customer facing capabilities, I just don't expect even a company like Amazon to take Rufus and say, you know what? We're, going to wipe out 10, 15 years of how Amazon worked and just going to replace it with an AI. And see it work. Let's bring Derek in and Joe. Derek, your thoughts. What do organizations need to start really thinking about AI first UX?
Well, it's some of the things Joanne mentioned are spot on. I mean, the mindset shift definitely has to change moving across. And you look at, discipline across the leaders, they need to adopt this. Instead of going from build to ship, they need to look sense to understand, govern to use, and adapt to fully utilize. They need to better understand how this is going to work. As Joanne mentioned, the developers of artificial intelligence tools, they're really trying to figure out what the end user is going to want. The end user is trying to figure out what the developer is going to make my life easier. So when they look at this, I'm looking at it now from a resilience or risk point of view. How do I get this to be a thought process that's more proactive versus reactive? It needs to be a forethought as opposed to an afterthought. And the governance piece is going to be huge. The governance piece should not stifle innovation, but it should adopt and move innovation forward. And some of the things, looking at the tools that are out there just on the agentic and the AI agents and stuff, is really looking at the threat landscape and understanding, although a lot of these manufacturers are embedding new tools to allow the ease of use and make it easier for the end user, that's nice, but you still have to look at how you're protecting your ecosystem and your business culture when they're looking at the marketing and these other directives within their business. And I think looking at a holistic approach and designing the simplicity and the complexity of what you need to do upfront is going to be key. But there, again, it's still an evolving process. One of the things I'm looking at is the threat-informed design for AI experiences, is make it easier so that end user can now be trusting the systems that they're using and have to worry about the risk associated with those. And that really goes back to the companies and businesses that are using these tools, make that investment into tools like a MITRE ATLAS tool that actually looks to better understand what's taking place in your ecosystem, but actually look at those threats on the back end, so your end user is not always trying to look over their shoulder to see what's happening. It's an evolving process, and like I said, it's going to take time to really get into it. But I think by taking these steps and working towards these systems to help it adopt, they can start developing trust from marketing and a design point of view, so they can actually have more free flow of the utilization of these tools that are out there.
Derek, Kevin Wallace Eade on the Common Channel, he was our special guest last week. He also echoes the need for governance and trust. And I'm going to translate that into two things that are difficult when you start thinking about customer experiences. First is the impact of on brand if you get it wrong, right? And we've
Yes.
seen a few companies try to get stuff out into production in B2C avenues and royally screwed up because once you put it out there, it's,
You can't take it back.
you can't, well, you can take it back, but someone finds a hole and all of a sudden getting, coupons or getting free things because they know how to game the AI to do that, you're in real trouble. So there's a brand governance issue here that marketers really have to be cognizant of. And part of this, and I'll, see if John and Joe have comments on this. I don't think our testing methodologies are strong enough yet. I don't think we know how to test
It's evolving.
LLMs. I don't think we
Yes.
know how to test agents in a comprehensive way to say, you know what, this is ready for prime time. And I think that's what's slowing things down. And I think the third thing is this stuff is expensive.
It is.
It's expensive to a skill set, it's expensive to build your models up. So the development process is expensive. And then, why is Alexa from Amazon only just getting LLM capabilities? Because this stuff is power hungry. It's going to cost them a lot of money at scale to run an LLM behind something else, like an Alexa with voice, with comprehension, and make sure they can get a return on that investment. So, Joe, a bunch of different reasons you want to echo one, or do you have a new one you want to share with us?
Well, I think 30 years on, Isaac, to your point about how well do we test things, for those of us who have been caught in IVS hell, we still haven't figured out how to think like people and not like a decision tree. I think Joanne made a very cogent point when she talks about mindset I agree with my good friend Kevin Wallace. It's about the mindset. We have to think about these things differently. Roman said human computer interaction folks are doing well. Well, they think about how people ask questions and how people talk to each other, and they're not like programmers. They're like, people. So until we come at this with a design for people, I think what Joanne said was very apt too. We're not designing for a cell phone. We're not designing for a laptop. We're designing for interaction with people. And that's the kind of mindset and change in approach that has to be embedded in our staff. One other thing I want to point to with respect to Joanne and agentic versus Gen AI. Earlier this week, I was in a discussion with some folks talking about training or hiring new managers. We've talked about how you need experts to govern the AI and to understand, for example, code generated, how good is it, when we've lost the entry-level positions. Well, the point was made that, yeah, we may not be hiring entry-level people anymore, but now what we're hiring are managers of AI, managers of agents who have to know how or learn how to manage the technology as if it were their staff. And that's another new skill set that I just don't think we've mastered yet.
We're going to go to skill sets in just a second, so thanks for that. But I want to hear from John.
Hi,
John,
Isaac.
yeah, good to hear from you. Let's put you in the hot seat, right? Your chief digital officer and your CEO says, 6 months, I want my UI to be, agentic. Whatever that means, what are some of your concerns that are going to be at the forefront before you start transitioning to an AI first user experience?
Well, I think we're still figuring out how to interact with AI. People have made the comments that we've got the chat bots, the text. We got that part of it pretty figured out. But anything that requires a physical device, devices really take time to build. And I even think back to a long time ago in Silicon Valley when somebody was talking about their startup and whenever they would mention a physical device, like everyone would shrug on that one. And working at a company that used to build embedded devices a couple of companies ago. It's just the embedded devices, they take time. And so figuring out how to stitch AI into these things is going to take time. Some ones that have been really, really successful, I think of like the Nest thermostat. That was a thermostat that was extremely simple for people to use, but it had some pretty neat algorithms in the background to try to figure out how to heat the house and have it be the right temperature for people. But they made something that was so simple to install, so simple to use that it's like it was widely adopted, even though it was a pretty advanced technology. I'm in the healthcare space, and we're starting to see some really neat things where we're deploying these devices. Sensei AI is one of them. They have their own cellular network, so they're really easy to install. You just drop them in people's houses, and they're able to look for degradation in people's health or when people fall and things like that. And so they've made it so the install is so easy, and it uses AI to basically figure out what's going on in the house, and then it sends a report to the people that are monitoring it, and it tells how people are declining over time. And so this is using a ton of AI. But they've figured out how to make it really easy to deploy and really easy to for all the parties, the families that have these things, that they're typically in elderly people's houses, but they've made it so that there's a human that calls them or talks to them, and so they've made that interface super easy, and those are being pretty successful. And then I've seen some pretty good situations where people have stitched AI chatbots into the web pages themselves. And so that if you ever have a problem on the web page, there's a chatbot actually built in, and it can see everything that the production team can see on the back end. And so it's like that's how I'm starting to see people stitching AI into interfaces. That's like the baby steps of it. But those are the things that work. It has to be really simple, it has to be frictionless, and it has to make people's lives better.
I think that's why even on the enterprise software side, when you talk about, agents taking over or partnering with specific roles, so a hiring manager or a financial analyst or a content manager in marketing, and what you're really seeing is more task-based agents out right now. So they're focused on helping that role do one thing really well, and then moving on to another agent doing another thing really well. And this whole notion of orchestration, I'm going to wait for Joanne to comment on this. I still think that's a work in progress in terms of what the technology is capable of. But let's shift gears. We're going to talk about, how to drive the innovation. That's going to be a part of our last conversation. I want to go back to our conversation around skills, particularly around product, around marketing and IT. Last week we had the conversation about how companies are just not hiring level one people. And we have a lot of anxious grads or just near grads that want to make sure they are getting skills in employable areas. So that's my question today. If we think that AI is going to go beyond software companies, that every retail company, every media company, every insurance company, every healthcare company, every bank is going to have to rethink their user experience to be able to leverage either a language model or become more agentic and everything in between. What do we think we need to train for? Go ahead, Joanne.
I think that there's a couple of things that we need to train for. One that is often overlooked is process design. Because really, what you're doing is you're mirroring the process, whether it's the customer journey or the internal, okay, or the internal individual, internal to the enterprise, I mean. We have to start looking more deeply at the process because whether you're using a generative AI tool or agentic, it's the process that has to change. It's not about the modality anymore, in terms of form factor or speech to text or text to speech. It's about what is this process trying to accomplish and how to give the best value to the individual who is using it. Particularly on the consumer side. I mean, AI bots do not know if I'm in a bad mood. They don't know what my sentiment is. They don't know what my intent is. And what they're doing is they're taking my prompt, if it's text or my speech, and saying, oh, we think she's trying to do X, or her intention is to do Y. They're not looking at who is she, what level of education does she have? What is her age? Where is she coming from? Those things are derived by parsing using NLP, for example, natural language processing, to a degree. What am I trying to say to the AI? That interpretation from them then gets translated, but there's a lot of nuance there. And AI has a hard time with that unless it's using mathematics or symbology as the way it's doing that translation. So if we go back to the process of the customer journey or the, put something in a cart or buy it, those are the areas where they make the best improvement. And the people that they should be hiring for are process engineers, not UX UI, because the UX and UI is from a visual form factor based perspective. There are not that many UX UI people that I have ever come across that actually deal in other modalities like speech. So I think that's where you're seeing a shift, and process engineering is making a big comeback for this field.
Interesting. Interesting. What do you think, Liz?
I'm a big believer in process engineering, but I'm going to have to disagree on a couple of things. One, the idea of doing CX, not the UI part, but the CX part, really has to do with understanding the customer. And what I've been seeing lately is that there are a lot of AI tools out there that are using the language, like you can speak into the tool and it will derive tone and provide feedback. I was looking at a recent tool that is used to train call center reps, where they can actually read listen and transcribe all the incoming call, listen and transcribe all the information that the is being spoken by the call center rep, and provide feedback on intention of the caller, tone, provide feedback on what you can do to help, address all of their concerns, see if we actually did can address all of their concerns. And I think that this is exactly where we're going. And it has to do with the key skill of being able to listen, so that when we're creating these bots or AI tools, whatever you want to call them, that they are trained on not only listening to the language that's spoken and making sure that they're thorough, but even going beyond that and contextualize what the person is trying to do beyond the specific transaction.
Interesting. Oh boy, got a little bit of debate here, but I think, I'm going to round out where Michael Vollinger just commented, right? We need a, layering AI on top of a legacy process or a point solution or a step in the process, and expecting exponential results will miss 100% of the time. And I think why it's relevant to say this is that, when we're starting to get into the customer experience, we have a lot of rethinking to do about what their needs are. And I think that's your point, Liz. I'm going to take my break here. We're going to bring Roman back to talk about skill development, our upcoming coffee hours over the next 4 weeks. I announced them earlier this week. This week is Data Privacy Week. I probably should have had this episode be our data privacy episode. But you know what? We're going to talk about what's really important, what we learned, and why it matters, data privacy. Given all the announcements that came out this week, we're going to do a recap next week and say, what are we changing and our goals and our objectives around data privacy. On the 13th, we will be talking about transforming to skill and outcome-based hiring. I think we'll have to talk about this from the employer and the hiring manager and the employee side. That will be on the 13th. I'm hoping Heather May will be back here for us to talk about that important topic. On the 20th, it's National Entrepreneurship Week. We're talking about opportunities for digital trailblazers to go solo and create your great AI startup. It's not what it used to be 2 or 3 years ago. You got to be smarter about your value prop going into it now. So we'll talk about entrepreneurship in the on the 20th. And on the 27th, this is from Liz. She debated me whether or not QA is important. We're going to talk about DevOps in the AI era, restating QA's mission. And I'm going on record in saying, if we want to bring AI, LLMs, agentic AI, AI agents, we need a better defined QA function to be able to pull that off, because brands should be terrified about putting something out there that is more open-ended, that is going to be battle tested by customers, and not having a prescriptive way of running tests before we release and before we upgrade those types of models. Roman, you're the dean of students.
I am not the, trust me, I am so low on the totem pole.
Okay, but you're closest person here for us at the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. You're going to steer 10,000 students over the next 2 years over where they should focus in their career, and AI is changing everything. Let's talk marketing, let's talk product, let's talk IT. You talked about human computer interface. What other areas of skill development you think are really important for students, for recent graduates, and for companies to cultivate?
Product management is probably the biggest one. That what we're seeing is AI, even today, is augmenting lots of different roles and skills that are out there. Product management. I know this session is focused on the design discipline and user experience, customer experience stuff. By augmentation, what I'm really talking about in that area would be things like user research is getting augmented by AI. That used to be a very time-consuming, resource-heavy thing that they had to do, but now you can do things like analyze thousands of user interactions, have AI-driven heat maps, do predictive analytics that highlight specific friction points for real-life problems, not just customers, but entire processes. The other one is, and I'm surprised we haven't gotten to it yet, is rapid prototyping and testing. Vibe coding has gotten a lot of press lately, but if you think about it, high fidelity prototypes are now something that lots of different people can produce using vibe coding tools like Lovable or Vercel. The other part of your question, though, was I wanted to mention the fact that if you are a person that doesn't have people you can, or a company that doesn't rely on or doesn't have people with design skills that are ready to go, what we've done in companies that I've worked with that's worked very well is starting any new innovative use, we started with a cross-functional team dedicated to rethinking either the process we want to change or how we do that. And usually that starts with some kind of training. So, a simple starting point might be a cross-functional team to help put together an AI literacy training curriculum or an AI, agentic AI process view way of changing things. So the big company, and I think I've heard this multiple times on your coffees, is the big mistake companies are making is they assume if they just give out Gen AI to their employees, they're going to become more productive and somehow that's going to create business benefit. And alone, I don't think that can happen. So that's my short end of it.
That's a pretty long for a short end, Roman. I'm going to add another one from you, and I'm hearing a lot more of this right now. I'm hearing the executive that is projecting a moonshot vision, and rallying the board for a big investment, and then going back to their teams and saying, "Let's go do this." And I'm listening to it. I'm like, there's probably five or six rapid prototyping that I would probably do before I went and promised that to the board. And so I think we have both problems. I think on the bottom end, we have, throw the tools at the staff and see what they make out of it. And on the top down end, we have big promises that haven't gone through enough sort of feasibility steps to say, hey, we're inching our way towards something real here.
And I guess my suggestion is take advantage of people like product management or in design. Those people have a lot of expertise that they can leverage even today. If you don't have those people, put together a cross-functional team that can start usually with something simple, either AI literacy or AI in the help desk, things like that.
Excellent. Let's go back to John. John, we're talking about skills. Let's also bleed into governance to drive safe and innovation. I'm really interested in when AI is actively shaping the journey, what customers see, the offers they get, even the tone of responses. What governance do we need to ensure these experiences remain on brand compliant and fair and without killing innovation? So go in either direction. We got 20 minutes left. This is a
Yeah,
great conversation.
I think AI is so good at informational retrieval. And so one of the skills that's really important are really like the librarian skills. And so I think the skills that somebody learns as a librarian are how to organize information. And the better the information is organized, the better the AI can retrieve it. And you're even seeing that now on websites that you used to be able to ask Google like a question to the website, and the website owners would be responding on it on the my Google local business. But now they actually Google just points at the website and uses its language model to answer the questions based off what's on your website. So the better the website you have, the better FAQs are automatically generated by things. And then so I think if you want any of this stuff to work, the language models can change at any time. And so I think you have to build some sophisticated filtering in so that people aren't using things inappropriate. And so you really have to think through what is an appropriate request and what is not an appropriate request. And you have to put a bunch of safeguards in so that things are appropriate for ages. And then you have to test it when it's released, and then you have to continually test it because these AI models that are third parties can change at any time without telling you.
And so when I think of why Alexa has delayed rolling out a language model, it's because I have three kids that are using it on a daily basis almost the entire time when they're home. They ask it all sorts of questions, and it could really hurt the Amazon brand if it was saying things that are inappropriate. And so I think that the continuous monitoring and the just really hardening it so it's not doing inappropriate things is so important for brand protection.
Love that answer, John. Let's go to Derek. Derek, skills or safe innovation? Where do you want to go?
So, things mentioned earlier, I think the rescaling, but also factoring those things of cross-sectional or cross-functional type operating from a resilience point of view. I mean, some of the things I actually put into the chat here, but looking at AI product owners, looking at AI and user design and conversation and design agents, these are all things going to be required. AI prompt and policy engineers. And what they do is not just one particular unit that's focused on, it's really looking at all the business units that are going to come underneath this. And even taken to the point of security, reliability engineers, policy engineers, all focused on AI is going to be key. But I think, as Dan mentioned in the chat, also one of the things is reskilling personnel to understand it. So, taking somebody who's been an architect that's worked with the systems and now helping them to become an AI first and user type architect to help them better understand it. Taking somebody that's worked from either the finance, the marketing, or the communication side of the house, have them work with developers from an AI point of view to understand what they really need to help in marketing and actually working with understanding how to push it out as an end unit or product. Security and risk teams are always going to be something that you're going to need, as John mentioned earlier. Being able to monitor adversarial AI threats and concerns are going to be key throughout all organizations at every single level, whether you're working with your internal stakeholders or external, because this is things now as AI is getting more complex, they're actually now finding ways to get around things such as encryption. So we need to make sure we have the proper AI threat intelligence tools in place and somebody monitor those to better understand how is this going to impact my organization and training them in the way that they can continue to understand and learn how these things evolve over time.
Thank you, Derek. I'm glad you brought up Dan's comments. He's got a couple on the comment stream about
Yes.
architects. And I, you know, my response to this, Dan, is that, you know, if you look inside enterprises that have architects, which aren't enough of them, you know, they're siloed because of the level of expertise that's required to build up that skill set. So there's data architects, there's application architects, there's solution architects, enterprise architects, security architects. Basically, every discipline has its own architect. And now, when you bring an AI solution to market, right now, you need a hybrid of those skill sets, right? You can't just be an application or data. You need to see how those two fit together. And then, if you are concerned about compliance and security, you can't be absent of those skill sets. So I think, you know, this is a call for super specialist, super generalist architects that can play in a number of different skills to be effective when you're building AI applications. John, what do you think?
Yeah, because like things get there 90%, it's a Pareto rule. But if you want things to work at the 100% level, that's where you need the specialist. And I heard a talk by the Microsoft guy that led testing for Windows, and I've heard it a couple times. And people get mad at Windows for having all these issues, right? But what he ultimately said is when you have millions and billions of people's using something, you're going to find the edge cases, and the only way to find the edge cases is to get a lot of people using it. And if you want to avoid the edge cases, you got to get the absolute best people possible doing everything you can to not have those edge cases, and that's where you need the experts.
Interesting. We think we have enough of a tool set or methodology to find and test edge cases.
No. I mean, when I think about all the automated testing out there's so much for security, and there's so much for like methodology that's been built up over the last, I don't know, 100 years of like computers, right? But I think we're just starting to get the concept of testing AI out, and there's frameworks for it and things. But I think starting with the requirements of what's allowed, what's not allowed, I think you have to really think through what's appropriate for the specific situation, and that needs business buy-in. And then from there, it's like, hey, you need the technical stuff to implement what the business people want. And I just there's needs to be a lot more work out there.
Excellent. You know, I got another comment here from Rachel Radin, talks about change management. I need to put that plug in here with Martin out of the speaker seat today. I completely agree. I think we need more people who are change managers. I also think we need more anthropologists. I'm thrilled my daughter is studying this. When we talk about human computer interfaces and we start thinking about it in large scale, being able to really understand the impact on people, I just think it's an under appreciated skill set that will become more important. Let's go to Joanne. Hey, Joanne.
Hi there. I think one of the things, to build on what I said previously and what others have said, it's not just about putting together the cross-functional teams. It's also representing the codependencies, interdependencies, and cross-references of data and processes, right? We always tend to, end up with siloed systems. Because when they're designed and when they're built, they're a particular function. But with AI, we have the opportunity to be cross-functional and to think about how business processes interact and interweave with each other. Think back a year and a half ago to digital tapestry. The idea is that things are related to other things. So, to your point, generalist enterprise architects, process engineering, all of that needs to come in when we're talking about whether it's a customer-facing system or not, whether it's internal or external. Because on the customer side, you can't interpret everything that someone is going to say 100%. You might get to 90 if you're really, really lucky. But you need to think beyond what their current ask is and what's the bigger picture. So as we put people together in organizations to look at AI, we need to think about all of the aspects of that as well, because if we don't, you're never going to be 100% true to brand.
Interesting. Let's go to Liz. Are we talking about governance or are we talking about skill development?
Well, all of the above, but I think that I wanted to build on some of these conversations we were having about prototyping. And making sure and finding the edge cases. I think that those and change management, all of those sort of go together around this sort of, I guess someone in the comment was talking about CXO. I think it was also Rachel, about how we need to think about how the end experience is actually going to be enhanced and validated and do it in a way that sends out some kind of solution. Gets the feedback, the anthropological feedback, the understanding what's actually happening, and then builds on that and builds on that so that we can actually incorporate those edge cases. And that whole approach is sort of a dovetail of, agile meets CXO meets AI. Like there's so much involved in there. And then obviously there's the internal architectures, but I mean, to me, it's all about business strategy and the business case and expanding your footprint and making sure it's valuable in the marketplace.
Liz, I'm translating that as the new experience better and in what ways that could be scaled. If I take my testing of Amazon Rufus yesterday, I would say it's not better. I wouldn't scale it yet. Keep it in that tiny little button in the top hand corner and I'll try it again in another month. We had, I forget who it was. It was my friend, Steven. And we had our episode on AI for social good. And he talked about really language models that are the new front end to forms, right? And so I'm going to type in a paragraph form instead of going and clicking through 16 boxes on a UI. That could be a really easy form factor because the output is controlled and you can do data validation on that translation from language into how that form is being fixed. And you can get people to validate it once you get your data in there. I think we're going to find some examples of that. I think Joanne wants to chime in on an example here. So Joanne, chime in on an example, but I do have one final question for everybody too, and you'll be the first. When are we going to see the Uber or Airbnb AI agent moment in a B2C context? Go ahead, Joanne.
Let me answer the question first. Before the end of 2026, you will see it. There are people actively working on it. The other, and it's because there's not just a need for it. It's because the mindset is starting to shift that, where we were so ingrained in form factor and we were so ingrained in the way UI was being designed, people are demanding it. You're not the only one who's dissatisfied with Rufus. There's so many companies that are trying to crack this nut, and the question is the approach that they're using to do it and whether they're using the right approach or not. And it's not about LLMs, frontier models. It's about small language models, because it's a much more constrained question that you're asking, regardless of whether you're talking to the bot, you're typing something in, it's giving you a response, etc. The reason I say the end of 2026, I don't know, when I speak to Gail, our product, and I say, hey, what's going on? It answers me. And it tells me when I look tired, and it tells me, all sorts of other things, which is a conversation in and of itself. But the other point that I wanted to make with respect to this is to change management and governance, they go hand in hand. And if we're not paying attention to what actually makes up governance, and that includes tribal knowledge, we're not going to hit the mark. Because when you ask for a tip, when you're filling in that one text box instead of clicking to, 100 times on a form, you're giving the user the opportunity to either opine or give their knowledge. And that should be used to reinforce the learning of any model, whether it's a frontier model or a small language model. And that's what's going to promote the change that we're all looking for on the B2C side.
Interesting. So, but you think it's coming aggressively soon.
Very soon. Very, very soon. There will be when you ask a bot, human, and it will actually understand you want to speak to a person.
Interesting. What do you think, Roman? When's it coming? When we're going to see the sort of that inflection B2C application that will get us thinking differently?
Oh, I'm already seeing some of that today. I mean, when I call my plumbing company, I'm talking to a bot and they're trying to engage me, by the way. They're trying to upsell me after I ask for the plumber to come out. So I think you're seeing parts of it already. I do want to go on to your last question, though, about governance a little bit before we run out of time. I think you and Derek both talked about upskilling architects. I think we also need to upskill our legal and compliance people so that they're more focused on trust and safety and able to create those guardrails and human in the loop rules and audit playbooks that we're going to need for governance. A while back, I think it's almost a year, you had a guest speaker, Sukanya Konatan. And she wrote a primer that I used to develop something for a governing framework. She wrote a book called Governing AI for a Responsible Future. And it's a great primer.
I've read that book. It is a
And
very good book.
what I gleaned from it and built out of that was really governance can be done in three dimensions. You've got today with AI, you've got the breadth scale, the whole lot of people who can build a whole lot more things. And how do we manage what's going on? Because you can't do code reviews on everything. Then we've got the, think of it as the Y scale, the depth. How do you handle a single solution that needs to scale to an enterprise level, from just one or two people to hundreds or thousands of users? And then on the third axis, you've got, as some people mentioned, like an operational oversight. How do people maintain oversight of these agents? Need new interfaces for high volume oversight, maybe dashboards, which also needs to include security, access data, exfiltration of data. Keep going down the list. So, yeah, those are the things you got to worry about in governance. And I kind of did it based on some of the reading I did and creating that XYZ axis of breadth, depth, and operational oversight. And where do you want to draw the lines?
Roman, thank you for joining us this week. Really good comments. I see a separate comment here from Joe, is also debating when we're going to see the Alexa Siri moment where there's clearly really good AI and voice responsiveness. I still don't think we're going to see it in 2026. I think we'll see pockets of it. What do you think, John? Do you have a favorite B2C
Yeah,
one that you think is, go ahead.
I think the one that's going to come in through the back door is the AI agents built into the web browsers, because the web browsers are kind of like the middleman between, one of the most used interfaces between us and the world, and it's used by so many things. And so I think we're starting to see it already, is that they're stitching AI into the browsers, and that's going to have some serious governance implications, because the stuff that you see on your browsers, financial, business, everything like that. And then I think we're actually starting to see AI specific browsers being built, and that's going to be really interesting.
Do you have a favorite one you're using now?
I don't use them because I just like I don't trust it. And so especially so at work, we're dealing with very, very sensitive HIPAA data, and so I have to like go through all my tools to make sure that they're HIPAA approved, and so I'm waiting.
I think you just introduced a topic we're going to have to cover. We have not covered AI web browsers yet. Every time I log into Perplexity, it's bothering me to download comment, and I'm like, I don't have time to play around with this. Joanne, have you played around with these yet?
Yeah, I have actually. And I'm liking a couple of them. I'm going to keep them out of the mix of which brands they are. But let's just say that my Perplexity account and I are parting ways.
Oh. I've been feeling a little bit of that myself, but for different reasons. I think we're going to see a lot of leapfrogging back and forth for the next few years, which I think is another reason why we're a little afraid to start putting AI first UXs out, because if we built it with one partnership with one model and the cost change or the capability changes, we got a lot of rework to go do. I think brands are also cognizant. I think CIOs are cognizant of that. It's been a really interesting conversation. Any last thoughts, Joanne?
Just very quickly, I think to John's point, they are being built into the browsers. I think the browser itself is getting radically different from what I'm seeing, because even those that are big makers of them are recognizing the need for multimodality.
Yeah.
You need to be able to talk to it. You need to be able to have it have the heuristics that are needed as if you were speaking with another human.
See, I don't know, Joanne. Coming off my trip to Japan a few weeks ago, like, voice is not going to be a big win in Japan. And the simple reason is I can click on my phone on the train. I can't use voice on the train. It's like a, there's nobody speaking on trains there. It's just one of those things. And it's beautiful and it's amazing. But you're not going to see people on Japanese trains talking to an AI bot or an LLM or anything like that. I don't think you're going to see that in India as well, because of the many dialects and languages that are spoken there. I don't know if that would be my first place to be looking, but I do think the form factor is going to change.
Yeah, 100%. And there are different ways to skin the cat. I mean, it is a cultural thing. There's no question. I think we are not all that verbose on our trains either. I think the issue is also there's also a need, two needs, and one is accessibility. Right? I mean, you're gonna want to be able to have AI that understands International Sign Language. You're going to have it for any number of particular needs based on accessibility, but also generally speaking, that we're all getting really tired of typing prompts. It takes too long, it's cumbersome. We need another way to be able to do this. You can't do it on a factory floor, as an example,
Yeah.
but you could talk to something. And
Well,
that's why mixed realities are so big.
I think we've got a bullish forecast that we're going to see big changes this year, given all the skills and disciplines we still need inside companies to change customer-facing user interface. It's been a really good conversation. Folks, thanks for all the comments. I captured some of these in the whiteboard. This episode I will publish publicly. So thank you for that. Jay Farrow closes this. That's all we need. More people talking to their phones out loud in public. I agree with you, Jay. Folks, thank you for joining this week. We'll be back next week to talk about Data Privacy Week, what we learned and why it matters. That's on the 6th. On the 13th, transforming to skill and outcome-based hiring. On the 20th, we'll talk about National Entrepreneurs Week, opportunities for digital trailblazers. And on the 27th, we'll be talking about DevOps in the AI era, restating QA's mission. If you want to be a speaker, if you have ideas for topics, please do reach out to me. And folks, let us know. A lot of cold in the U.S. going on right now, although I am thrilled. At the start of this episode, we saw so many people joining internationally from India, from UK, from all over. Please invite your friends, and let's continue to make this a really vibrant conversation here at the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. Just remember, you can get to the next week's episode at the URL starcio.com/coffee that will redirect. And if you want to look at previous episodes, go to drive.starcio.com/coffee. I have the previous episodes posted there. Folks, have a great weekend, and I hope to see all of you here next week for the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. Bye now.